we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thursday marked the first full day of action at the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast of Australia, and South African sports fans had reason to cheer. The South African Henry Schoeman won the gold medal in the men's triathlon, clocking 52 minutes and 31 seconds. It was South Africa's first ever gold medal in triathlon at the Commonwealth Games. Local favorite Jacob Birtwistle of Australia won the silver medal, and Scotland's Mark Austin won the bronze medal. Now, 2 years ago in Brazil, the 26-year-old Schoeman won an Olympic bronze medal at the Rio Games. Afterwards, Henry said he thought he had the ability to become an Olympic champion and a Commonwealth champion.
I just basically want to take the next 2 and 4 years, enjoy it, improve on my running, improve on the small little things where I'm lacking. And if I improve on those things, then no doubt I'll be able to be an Olympic champion or Commonwealth champion.
That's Commonwealth Games triathlon champion Henry Schoeman of South Africa. The first gold medal of the 2018 Commonwealth Games was awarded to Bermuda's Flora Duffy in the women's triathlon. The 30-year-old Duffy completed the event in 56 minutes and 50 seconds. Jessica Learmonth of England won the silver medal, and Canada's Joanna Brown won the bronze medal. In other Commonwealth Games news, Australia's reigning world champion hurdler Sally Pearson has withdrawn from Gold Coast 2018 because of an Achilles tendon injury. The 31-year-old Pearson is a 2-time Commonwealth Games champion in the women's 100-meter hurdles, as well as the 2012 Olympic champion in the event. Sally had been struggling with the Achilles problem in the build-up to the games in her homeland. In the Commonwealth Games men's basketball tournament, Cameroon is off to a winning start, beating India on Thursday 96-87. Arnold Kome had a team-high 21 points for Cameroon, while teammate Mohamed Tassasse grabbed a game-high 13 rebounds. Still with basketball, let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to Dante DiVincenzo, a reserve guard for Villanova University. Dante delivered the best game of his college basketball career earlier this week and helped lead the Wildcats of Villanova to their second national title in 3 years. My Voice of America colleague Jim Stevenson tips off this spicy sports package with Dante DiVincenzo.
Honestly, no. I did not think that I was going to have this kind of night.
The U.S. College Basketball National Championship came down to the spectacular play of Villanova sophomore guard Dante DiVincenzo. His 31 points against Michigan were the most by a sixth man off the bench in a national title game, while also shooting better than 66% from the floor in a Final Four game.
If we get off to a good start, I try to take that energy to a new level. I try to defend, and I try to rebound to best my ability and just trying to get it going. And like I said, these guys did a great job of just finding me, and I found myself in the rhythm.
Michigan took a solid lead early in San Antonio, Texas. Villanova coach Jay Wright says he was outsmarted by the opposing coach.
You know, John Beilein is one of the best coaches of all time. They got early. We weren't prepared for some of the things they were doing. They jumped on us, and I should have known better with John. And then we kind of got settled in after that and did a good job defensively.
But midway through the first half, Jay Wright called on his tall redhead nicknamed Big Ragu, who began hitting three-point shots seemingly at will, a force Michigan coach John Beilein had no answer for.
We needed to play better, but even if we had played our best,
It would have been very difficult to win that game with what DiVincenzo did. It was an incredible performance. So sometimes those individual performances just beat you, and you just say, okay, you take off your hat and say, good game. We played you the best we could, and tonight you were better than us.
DiVincenzo had a huge 10-for-15 shooting night, 5-for-7 from three-point range, making him an easy winner for most outstanding player in the Final Four. Beilein said that he could find little to exploit in Villanova's lineup.
I mean, we were trying to find, well, who's the weak guy we can pick on? And there's a couple guys that aren't as strong as others, but it is a tremendous basketball team. That team right there could play against, it could win a lot of Final Fours, not just the 2018 one.
Villanova's 79-62 romp over Michigan was another blowout tournament victory, as they won all six games by double digits, joining the 2000 Michigan State team, Duke from 2001, and North Carolina's 2009 team in that rare air. Beilein and Wright politely disagreed on what Villanova accomplished.
When I looked at their scores in the NCAA tournament, there were not even any close ones. They were dominating everyone.
We don't look at it that way, you know, like that, oh, we just dominated that team. We just look at, okay, we played well, we played good 40 minutes, where do we need to get better? And I don't think these kids will even think that we dominated the tournament. They'll just think we played Villanova basketball, we got better the next night, we got better. We did keep getting better. We got better from the Kansas game. We got better defensively tonight. So that's what they take great pride in.
Villanova has won three national championship titles in men's Division I basketball, with two in the last 3 years. There is one thing that has been different for each game. Coach Jay Wright's suit.
There's a website or something, Jay Wright's Suits, and they critique it. So I really don't spend as much time on it as people think, but I know if I would wear the same suit, they would say it, so I make sure I don't.
Well, this suit is now a champion suit.
Another big man is a champion. American John Isner won the biggest title of his tennis career at the Miami Open.
It's incredible. I mean, I somewhere along in the second set, I found a second wind, and I felt so much better in the second set and the third set than I did in the first set. So to win like that in front of a crowd like that, that with that atmosphere, you can't replicate moments like that. It was absolutely amazing.
Isner defeated German Alexander Zverev 6-7, 6-4, 6-4.
It was more about me not finding a rhythm, and that was about it. But yeah, I just missed too many balls. That's it.
Isner claims his first Masters 1000 tournament title and is the first American to win in Miami since Andy Roddick in 2010. He also moves back into the top 10 of the world rankings.
Having coming in here won one match, and to leave this tournament top 10 in the world. And I think I got there in 2012, and I got back there in 2014, and now I've matched my high ranking in 2018. It's up to me now to keep pushing forward. This is a big hurdle for me, mentally more than anything.
And Isner is the final champion of the event held for three decades in Key Biscayne as it moves next year to north of Miami.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, this tournament has so much history. I mean, all of the best players have played here throughout the years, and for me to come out the winner in the last men's singles match ever here is pretty unique.
American Sloane Stephens also emerged as a first-time winner at the Miami Open with a 7-6, 6-1 win over French finalist Yelena Ostapenko.
Obviously, this place is pretty special to me. I grew up playing tennis here. When the USTA was here, we played Orange Bowl and all sorts of tournaments here, so I'm definitely happy that I could be the last person to win here. I've had some amazing experiences here, and I'm just feel fortunate that I was able to do that here in South Florida with all my friends and family watching.
The reigning U.S. Open champion will miss the familiar venue.
There's so many good things about the tournament that I'm going to miss because I've just been used to coming here for so many years and having the luxury of going to all my favorite places and, you know, doing things that kind of have been routine over the last, I'd say, like 10 years of my life or whatever. So I'm definitely going to miss it because this is definitely, Key Biscayne's a hidden gem.
I'm excited, as is everyone in the field. It's Masters week.
American Ricky Fowler is looking forward to playing his eighth Masters, the first major golf tournament of the year.
Saturdays and Sundays are special here when you do get that chance to be in there and to be there to see some friends win. you know, whether it's Bubba's playoff on 10, you know, seeing Sergio get it done in the playoff coming up 18. I'd love to have my chance at it.
England's Justin Rose also loves the special feeling of being on the storied Augusta National course.
It's always a pleasure to come up here. People say, you know, you've played the Masters 12 times. Why do you still go up early for practice rounds? I'm like, why not? It's Augusta. You know, you get a chance to play the course.
It's no wonder Rose loves the place. He's never missed a tournament cut at the Masters.
It starts by just driving up Magnolia Drive and feeling good and having good energy and feeling good about the place. And, you know, that sort of love affair started my very first Masters in 2003.
Two-time champion Bubba Watson has a recent win coming into the tournament.
There's no pressure on me. There's no pressure on any of us. The only pressure is what we put on ourselves.
And once again, prowling the course is four-time Masters champion Tiger Woods. His last win at Augusta National was in 2005, and he missed the last two Masters. Bubba Watson says it will be great for some of the younger players to share the course with Woods.
Some of these kids that are participating on Sunday, yesterday, you know, they've never got to see Tiger Woods that we've all got to see. So for him being healthy, I mean, there's nothing but great things when he's healthy.
Australian Jason Day is thrilled to see a healthy Tiger Woods possibly show his greatness again.
Now that he's back and he looks kind of where he was before, or he potentially can be, I think everyone's getting that taste back and they're like, oh, let's go, let's see what he can do.
And there's another old pro, 60-year-old German Bernhard Langer, a two-time Masters champion before winning a record 10 major titles on the senior tour.
My goal is to not just to, you know, maybe make the cut or something. I'd like to be in contention, like to be on the leaderboard and have a chance on Sunday to win the trophy or the green jacket in this case.
He's won two green jackets in this case. That's two-time Masters golf champion Bernhard Langer of Germany. First round action began Thursday at the Masters, the year's first major golf championship in the southern U.S. city of Augusta, Georgia. And thanks to my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson for that extra spicy sports package. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. As I mentioned at the top of the show, South Africa's Henry Schoeman won the gold medal in the men's triathlon Thursday at the Commonwealth Games in Australia. Joining us now with his social media reaction is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. After his gold medal run, Henry Schoeman posted on Twitter, as all winners should. Henry wrote, "Commonwealth Games champion, thank you everyone for supporting and cheering me. A dream come true." Schoeman's win comes as a pretty stunning upset, knocking the heavily favored Brownlee brothers from the medal standings. Olympic silver medalist Johnny Brownlee finished seventh in the race. Older brother and double Olympic champion Alistair finished 10th. After the race, the brothers said their struggles with injuries kept them from performing at full capacity, and partway into the 5-kilometer run, they knew they would be unable to keep up with Schoeman. They each expressed their disappointment on Twitter. Alistair wrote, "Tough day out there for both of us. I gave it all I had after a very testing last month. I enjoyed being out on the race course, and the body has held up fine." Johnny promised to bounce back, writing, "Didn't have the legs today. Gave it everything, but disappointed not to hold on for a medal. We'll recover and be ready for the relay on Saturday." That relay will be the Brownlee brothers' second chance to reach the medal podium. Well, just before the official start of the Commonwealth Games on Wednesday, around 100 Australian protesters gathered outside Carrera Stadium to demonstrate for Aboriginal rights. Many activists clashed with police and were detained for disruptive behavior and pushed back from entering the stadium. The demonstrators carried banners reading, "Colonization is not a game," and chanted, "No justice, no peace." They say Australia will always be Aboriginal land, and the Commonwealth Games should not be held there.
They've stolen the land, built this country on stolen wages, built this country in the blood and bones of our people. And it's about time that history is acknowledged.
No injuries have been reported. Those in attendance at the opening ceremony included Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and Britain's Prince Charles, who officially declared the Games open. The Games welcomed athletes from 71 Commonwealth nations and territories to share in the celebration of sport, entertainment, and culture. The president of the Commonwealth Games Federation has declared the event, quote, more relevant than ever before. Just over 2 million viewers tuned into Wednesday's opening ceremony, and the Games continue until April 15th. Stay tuned for more results. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. More Commonwealth Games news. Australia's track cyclists set the world record in the men's 4-kilometer team pursuit on Thursday, routing rivals England to win the gold medal in front of loudly cheering hometown fans at the Anna Mears Velodrome. The Aussie team of Leigh Howard, Sam Welsford, Kelland O'Brien, and Alex Porter blazed across the finish line in 3 minutes and 49.804 seconds. That beat the previous world record of 3 minutes and 50.265 seconds set by Britain at the 2016 Rio Olympics. The world record by the Aussie men came soon after their female counterparts beat New Zealand for the gold medal in the same cycling event. In European club football, Liverpool blew away Manchester City with 3 goals in the first 31 minutes Wednesday to secure a 3-0 victory in the first leg of the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals. Liverpool's African strike force of Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane both showed their world-class quality once again. Egyptian star Salah, the 2017 African Footballer of the Year, opened the scoring in the 12th minute. It was Mighty Mo's 38th goal of the season in all competitions. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain found the net in the 21st minute, and Senegalese star Sadio Mane wrapped up the scoring in the 31st minute. At the post-match news conference, Liverpool's German manager Jurgen Klopp praised his club's performance.
We used that really well, scored 3 fantastic goals. Second half, I know that you probably all love that. Can't be defended, very no shot on target, very deep, concentrated, all that stuff. I like it as well, but when we have the ball, we have to play more football, and that should be clear. And we can do that, so that's still space for a lot of improvement. But, of course, the result is the most important thing, and I never expected a perfect performance. I expected only that we be a real challenger, and we were a real challenger, and now we are 3-0 up. That's better than being 3-0 down, 100%, but it's not a decision. Everybody knows that as well. We go to Manchester City, and they want to strike back. They didn't play bad tonight. They only didn't create the usual number of chances.
In the 52nd minute, Jurgen Klopp decided to take his Egyptian star Mo Salah out of the match because of injury concerns.
Not too cool, Mo, I don't know. In the moment, he came to the sideline and said he feels sometimes something. And that was for me enough to not even to ask the doc how is he, immediately taking him off the pitch. And after the game, I asked him, he said, no, I will be good, I will be fine. So, but now we have to wait for the real diagnose and not only most self-diagnose. So we will see. Don't know in a moment.
Before the match, Liverpool fans threw beer cans at the Manchester City team bus. At least one bottle was thrown and smashed on the side of the bus, but no windows were broken. The bus was driving along Anfield Road near Liverpool's stadium. Man City's Spanish manager Pep Guardiola reacted to the fan violence.
So normally when the police know that is going to happen, is try to avoid that happen. So I didn't expect that for Liverpool side, for the people, but you know, 1 year ago it happened something in Dortmund. So we come here to play football, to sports, and I don't understand this kind of situation. So, okay, nothing happened, the bus is destroyed, but I didn't expect from a club this prestigious like Liverpool do this kind of thing. So, of course, it's not Liverpool, it's the people, you know, but it wasn't one, ni two, ni three. But hopefully don't happen again.
In Wednesday's other UEFA Champions League quarterfinal, host Barcelona beat the Italian club Roma 4-1 in Spain. A pair of own goals by Daniel De Rossi and Costas Manolas helped Barca win the first leg. The second leg is scheduled for April 10th in Rome. That same day, Manchester City will host Liverpool in the second leg of their series. And right now, if you had to put me on the spot, Sonny, who you picking to go through to the UEFA Champions League semifinals? I'm going with Liverpool, and I'm going with Barcelona. With that type of lead, you gotta believe the Reds of Liverpool and Barca are going through. I'm not going to sit on the fence. It's not happening. I'm not sitting on the fence. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports blog. The address is blogs.voanews.com/sunny. Once again, that address, blogs.voanews.com/sunny. My latest blog post is titled Worldwide React to Ronaldo's Wonder Goal, and I write about that incredible overhead bicycle kick that Ronaldo scored earlier this week for Real Madrid. I received an email from my buddy Darren Taylor in Johannesburg after Cristiano's spectacular goal in Turin. And Darren writes, "Sonny, people who don't know the difference between a watermelon and a soccer ball are talking about that goal." It was Ronaldo's second goal of the night, and it helped Real beat Juventus 3-0 in the first leg of their UEFA Champions League quarterfinals. Real, like Liverpool and Barca, looks like they're going to be going through to the semifinals. Ronaldo has never been known as a humble football great, but as my VOA colleague Gwen Uten said during Wednesday's show, he did show some gratitude to the fans in Italy, thanking them for their standing ovation after that incredible overhead kick. And as Gwen said during yesterday's program, it's amazing that Cristiano Ronaldo has scored in 10 consecutive UEFA Champions League matches. And speaking of consecutive streaks, the Philadelphia 76ers won their 12th game in a row last night in National Basketball Association action. J.J. Redick scored 25 points for the 76ers as they eliminated the Detroit Pistons from playoff contention with a 115-108 victory over Detroit. Philadelphia has been winning without their young Cameroonian star, Joel Embiid, who had surgery over the weekend for a broken orbital bone. And we hope Embiid is able to come back for the NBA playoffs. The 76ers will be competing in the NBA playoffs for the first time since 2012. Another big game on Wednesday night in the NBA. The Toronto Raptors beat the Boston Celtics 96-78. The Raptors increased their lead over the second place Celtics to 3 games. Both teams will be heading to the playoffs. And that wraps up the April 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Wojciech Zorniak. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Combating wildlife trafficking is a priority for the United States, said Deputy Chief of the U.S. Mission to the African Union, Jessica Davis, at a workshop on illegal wildlife trafficking held recently in Addis Ababa. To enhance cooperation and collaboration, we work closely with countries that are the sources of wildlife being trafficked and are building strong partnerships with demand and transit countries. In addition to our extensive United States Agency for International Development investments in biodiversity conservation throughout Africa, our Department of State Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement invested $40 million in the last 5 years to combat wildlife trafficking in Africa, she said. The U.S. has also provided the African Wildlife Foundation $4 million to strengthen regional law enforcement capacity to combat wildlife trafficking and support canine units in Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Cameroon, and Botswana. As well, the Department of State gave the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime $6 million to strengthen prosecutorial and judicial capacity to combat wildlife crime by increasing prosecutions in Kenya, Tanzania, and Botswana. Recognizing the value of scientific innovation, Ms. Davis noted, we provided almost $1 million for wildlife DNA forensics to improve the collection and analysis of DNA evidence. Through this project in Gabon, Tanzania, and Kenya, our partnerships ensure that enforcement agencies and the scientific community leverage the potential of wildlife DNA forensics. Together, they are improving the production of intelligence generated from illegal wildlife seizures to disseminate data for law enforcement action. The U.S. also supports the Horn of Africa Wildlife Enforcement Network. The purpose of the 3-day workshop was to formulate a common language or data dictionary for the full range of Geographic Information System, or GIS, databases to allow interoperability and help harmonize information across the continent. Setting shared GIS database standards is critical, said Deputy Chief Davis. Given the growing sophistication of wildlife traffickers, no single law enforcement official or agency or nation, for that matter, can fight this battle alone, she said. This is our shared fight. Setting shared GIS database standards is critical to us all playing on one team.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.